the tabletop takeaway.
Game mechanics on display.
Three designers share the stage.
Pick a genre and we'll play
the tabletop takeaway.
Welcome back to the Tabletop Takeaway. I'm Charlie McCarron.
I'm Trevor Muller-Hagel.
Wait. Where's Ananda?
Where's Ananda?
Oh, all right. He's in Sweden.
Oh, Sweden.
Yeah, because, well, it seems like sacrilege for us to record an episode without the three of us.
Absolutely.
But Ananda's not here to play a game with us in person and talk about it. So we decided to do something a little different this time. For this series, we're going to get to meet each other. Basically, for fans of the show who've been listening this whole time, maybe they are wondering, like, who are these guys?
Who the heck are we?
Yeah, we've, like, given little snippets here and there, but I think we also intentionally made this podcast not about interviewing
right
designers, doing the whole spiel every time,
yeah,
and getting right into like the game mechanics of everything and our game thoughts. But I think it's time for people to
behind learn, the takeaways,
yes, learn about us. So this first episode, I'm going to be interviewing Trevor.
Hello, my name is Trevor.
Yeah, so I think we're just gonna kind of freeform it here,
yeah,
and Trevor, maybe first tell us, like, where you grew up. And
yeah.
Well, for one, we are here in Minnesota right now. I don't know yep. how much we say that. Some people
yeah.
have to infer that we are in St. Paul, Minnesota, recording at Charlie's apartment. But Trevor, you did not grow up here.
I did not grow up here. So, yeah, I'm from Missoula, Montana. Was there until I graduated my undergrad at 22, 23, and then did some hopping around. I got my undergrad in theater, which was very exciting. Did a lot of nonsense in Missoula, and then hopped around, went to Creed, Colorado for a couple summer theaters, lived in Las Vegas, Nevada for a hot several months, went back to Montana for a spell, and then my sister moved here to the Twin Cities, and I followed her, and then started my theater career here originally.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a rough breakdown of the whole timeline.
Yeah. And like a lot of designers can probably relate that a lot of us didn't start out like thinking we're going to be game designers. Well, maybe on the other hand, okay, tell us about your past.
Okay. So I had this great idea when I was I don't actually remember how old I was, between 7 and 10. I was going to make this whole video game happen. My dad was a programmer. And so I was like, oh, hey, let's make a game. I'll make up all the rules and you just make it happen. You know, obviously that's what all of us want. So that's a great idea. And so I was coming up with this idea called Merlin's Fantasy. I was thinking about this earlier tonight. And my dad very fortunately had the ability to do a search at that time in our nation's history. And so he did find out that there was not a site that of ill repute, we'll say, with that title. And so... we did not pursue it, though. I wrote up some documents on it, you know, using Word 95 or something like that. My second game I made when I was 10 or, like, you know, didn't make it, right? These are just, like, kind of mock-ups on paper. Like, how would the game work? What do you think should happen here? And the other one was Crane Game Destroying Mania, about a video game where you're going around destroying crane games because I hated crane games so much.
Yeah.
Which was great.
That's
I loved it.
Awesome.
Yep.
Ironic that... Like, I had this experience, too, of, like, growing up wanting to make video games, but we mm-hmm. couldn't because there wasn't, like, easy coding programs.
And oh, yeah.
So you end up making stuff on paper, right?
Yep, and just shelving it forever. And,
yeah.
Yep.
But ironic that now you're back to making games on
paper. Back to making games, yep.
Yeah.
So, actually, I had thought a couple times about going to school for game design.
Okay.
And... You know, when I was going from high school to college, I was actually focused on theater or film. So I almost went into film and I almost moved to California to go to Long Beach, UCLA in Long Beach,
cool.
To pursue film. But I did not do that. I just stayed in Montana.
Yeah.
But I ended up with a BFA in design tech And so I have a lot of carpentry skills and a theater background.
Yeah.
Which is a fun combination.
And when you say design tech, that's like theater design, set design kind of?
Yeah. So there's a lot of complicated additions to my degree. But basically, scenic design and technology is the focus of my design, of my degree.
Okay.
Then my secondary was in sound design, which is always a fascinating secondary thing. But then my minor was in media arts. And I actually took a class on game design in that media arts program, but they only had one class on it. And so it kind of stopped there. But it was a lot of fun.
That's cool. And yeah, I guess what I was getting at earlier is that like people from who make games kind of come from all these random backgrounds of...
Oh my God, yeah.
Art disciplines or, I don't know, engineering or... Something.
Programming.
Yeah,
a lot of programmers.
A lot of programmers, yeah. But why did they get into programming?
Right.
Because they wanted to make video games.
Absolutely.
Pretty much.
Absolutely. That's why I wanted to learn programming. And I did it for a little while, but...
Yeah.
Yep.
So one of the first times I played one of your games or hung out with you, I think, was when I tried one of your chess variants.
Oh, yeah. I think, what was that? That was at Black Stack Brewery?
Yep.
Yep.
I thought that was such a cool idea. And you were doing a Patreon?
Yeah,
Yeah, like what? How did that project start? And
yeah,
what happened with that?
So that was the birth of my company called Split Perspective Studios. So that was actually way back then was the initial onset of that name.
Yeah.
And
which we'll get to.
Which
what
we'll,
it is now is something all different, but
very
really
different,
cool.
But exactly what I want it to be, right? But yeah, so... Basically, my goal was to make accessible games. You know, I was very poor as a working professional theater person. And so I couldn't afford games. I'm like, well, how can I design games? I can't afford components even, right? So, like, I was trying to find ways to make it so people could have access to these more intense mechanics, these really cool things that were coming out in the hobby game world. But, like, in a way that people could just, like, have access to it for very cheap, you know? So I started the Patreon where, like, I think the lowest... backing level was $1, and you would just get like the easiest variant, like print and play, basically.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting. I had a lot of great ideas for it, but I did start off way too soon, like starting the Patreon before I was ready. So I didn't have a backlog, really. I had like a few games, and I was doing a game a month.
Oh.
Which,
that's
an insane pace.
Yeah.
And I think I was making like, I don't know, like $30 a month, $40 a month from people, which is decent, but I had a couple of like the higher tiers too that were helping me out, which was great.
That's cool.
Yeah. But yeah, it was really awesome. And the goal was to basically just make different types of like chess variants, poker variants, or just using a deck of playing cards with a poker board. How can you use these very common components to make games? And I was trying to, my last one that actually killed me was trying to make a tactical RPG using chess.
Oh.
Yep. And that's what ended up doing it. It was like a solo adventure. So you had like five pieces that all had different abilities that you could level up and improve over a story. And you're actually like this royal family that was fleeing a kingdom.
Oh, cool.
And going into these different encounters with these different things.
Did you have like... homemade cards that people would print out or
yep,
for it?
Yep,
or?
It was like it was very much like a print and play in that respect, yeah. So there'd be these, like I don't know, it was like one or two sheets of paper. So like it was very simple. And I think I had tracks for improving like their attack or defense or things like that, or their health. And yeah, it was just a very simple thing where like you'd use a chessboard and it would just be an 8x8 board with these different like creatures and things that would come down. I think I laid a knight sideways, so it would cover up two spaces, so it would be a larger monster.
Like a undead knight, undead horse or something.
Yeah, like a horse, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so yeah, that's kind of the kind of stuff I played with. The one that you played, I think, was Sacrificial Chess, which was, I think, my favorite one that I made from that series, because it was so interesting, because you just start with a king and I think like five pawns, but you had an income of one pawn per turn, and then you could chain your pawns together to create a new piece that would be normal chess rules. So it could be a knight for like two pawns, a bishop for three pawns, so on and so forth. But like if you did lose everything, then you'd still be able to get something back.
Mm-hmm.
And so just a fun new way to play chess.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, you did that project. But I'm guessing in the meantime, you were also coming up with like bigger ideas maybe, or
yep. So strangely enough, during that same time, I tried to have Archmagus, which is one of my games that has been in development since that time. I had that as a print and play. And basically, I came up with this idea and made all the cards and printed it, and it worked all within like a couple weeks. And I was really proud of myself for doing it, but then it had a lot of hiccups in it. So I kept trying to playtest it and iron it out, but I still had it released on my website. And so like it was just a lot of kind of back and forth with that. But yeah, I was trying to like still make games. I had a game called Heroes Born of Darkness that I was actually trying to publish, but didn't have the money to fully publish it. So I was trying to find where I could get that money. And thankfully I didn't have the money because the game was not actually ready to be there. And so it was kind of like a really good, you know, soft blow to the face. Like, you're not ready. That's okay. You'll get there, but you're not ready yet.
Yeah. Financially prudent too.
Yep.
And, yeah. I mean, like, I think it's cool that you have this background also that we've probably mentioned on the show, but mm-hmm. you do taxes and
yeah,
work with finances.
And that's account. My now career. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, that seems very helpful considering you do want to self-publish someday. Right.
Well, in reality, I ultimately want to help people understand the risks and understand their business and help them navigate it too. And so, like, I kind of want to just be all around good at it and not even necessarily for myself. So, yeah, it's a fascinating little juxtaposition. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I love game design. I love publishers. And honestly, I love game design itself and want to make the best games that I possibly can. And if I don't think it's the best game I can make, then I don't want to, like, even tell a publisher about it.
Yeah.
Which is why I've sent one game off to a publisher once, and that was pretty much it.
That's it?
Yep.
Oh, man.
Yep. Well, one Color Match Pro
yes.
Was sent to one publisher.
Okay.
And they said no. And I'm like, that's fine. But they told me no, too, which is great. Because, you okay. know, I'd yeah. say probably maybe half of all publishers actually just don't respond. So
Yeah. That's for sure.
Especially in, like, just a blind email, right? Or, you know, cold yeah. email.
Yeah. I think off a cold email, I've never gotten anything out of those. It's oh yeah, that is the takeaway for
that's Charlie's takeaway.
Takeaway for designers out there. Like usually, you got to at least meet the person sometime.
Well,
even if it's like briefly at a convention,
right?
Like,
and that's what I was realizing too is that's what I needed to do. But again, I was at a point in my life where I didn't have the money to do so.
Yeah.
And so I couldn't go to conventions. I couldn't, like, take that next step. So what can I do? And so ultimately, I ended up changing my entire life and became an accountant so I could have money, so I could actually do these things in the future.
That's smart.
It was a yeah. big shift.
Yeah.
But also, like, theater was waning for me. I wasn't getting the... 'cause, so, full story...
Yeah.
The reason I went into theater is because I love collaborative storytelling. And so you're all working together to tell this story on stage. Even though if you're a carpenter, designer, actor, director, you're all working together to create something. And it's part of my draw towards game design as well. And telling the story through actions and through what you're doing is really important to me. But yeah, so like... I lost that somewhere along my professional life in theater. I was not actually collaboratively storytelling. I just, like, what do you need? Okay, great. I'll build it and put it there. Like, it was just like, it was a job.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't being paid enough, which, you know, makes mm-hmm. sense. It's theater. And so, yeah, changing careers became the focus. And I realized I loved analyzing my financial information for my business. It's like, well, what can I do with that? Oh, yeah, there's a whole world of that in reality where I just haven't been for years.
Yeah. It is funny how, yeah, like, we're maybe a little more artistic-minded than the average person.
Right.
And then you realize, like, oh, a lot of people think of these jobs that, like,
yeah
pay the bills a little better than the stuff we're
right.
sort of drawn to initially. But, yeah. So we mentioned Split Perspective
yep.
Studio.
Yep.
Which, yeah, tell us, like, so after the... Chess Project
mm-hmm.
and Patreon. Like,
so,
what happened there with Split Perspective?
So I got overwhelmed trying to do a game a month, which I don't know why I tried to do that, but I did. And it tanked, we'll say. So I just thought I couldn't make any games. I ended up canceling it because I felt bad taking everyone's money and not producing content. So I stopped the Patreon and ultimately decided to find another way about creating Split Perspective, because the idea was that I wanted to create games from multiple perspectives. And that was kind of the kind of core concept around it. And realizing that I actually wanted more perspectives in the design space and in that process. And I was like, well, how do you do that? And so I started going to some local conventions, specifically Protospiels. We have 2DCon here, which was my first one that I went as a publisher. And I had redone Heroes again. I'm like, okay, I'm going to take Heroes Burn of Darkness. I'm going to try and get it play tested. But like, I just was so out of energy from pursuing accounting, because I was doing that full-time with my full-time job. I just didn't even have a prototype ready for 2DCon. I'm like, well, I'm going to do my second backup thing, which is design games with people at 2DCon. Because then I don't have to prep anything for it. I just show up and we just sit down for like an hour and make a game. It could be just terrible. It could be amazing. Who knows what's going to happen? And so I sat there and in the back of my mind, I'm like, okay, I also want to start a new design group because I lost my last two ones. I'd been in two design groups previously, and after the pandemic, we'd all parted ways and like none of us were talking to each other anymore. So it's like, okay, well, let's start this fresh. And I had never led a design group before. I'm like, well, I think I have some ideas to make it a little bit better. I don't know if I did, but maybe I did. I like.
Yeah. So I mean, from my perspective, I think that what you've done with our design group is like the single best thing to happen in the Twin Cities.
Thank you very much.
Maybe since Protospiel came to town. I don't even know when that was, but
I think that was like 2010 or 2011, 12, somewhere in that range.
Okay.
Well, maybe a little after that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't long after I moved here, I think, that it started.
And that's once a year, or no. Was once a year.
Yeah.
And I have two, but yeah. Design Days, like when you started that, it's just like such a good community.
Yeah.
So like what I'd be curious to ask you about for other people listening, like,
yeah.
What are some things you've learned? Like, how do you foster community? How do you, like, we can consistently get like 20 people showing up twice a month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my biggest thing starting out, I didn't have a lot to spend towards like marketing it or pushing it still. Right. But you know, the way I thought about it is I'm going to start this event. It's going to meet twice a month. I tried to have it be predictable times, but ended a little chaotically. But yeah, if I did it twice a month and then people just showed up when they're able to and just be really cool about it. And then if people do show up, make sure that they are taken care of, right? And make sure that if they do have a game they want to test, play test it. If they have a game they don't want to test but want to talk about it with them. You know, like they're there to like expand their skills as a designer. And it's really hard to do that if you don't play test or don't, you know, work on the design. And so my biggest thing is like, okay, if no one shows up, what's the worst that can happen? I work on my games and I get better at designing, which mm-hmm. is the purpose. And so like, that's all it was for. And there was one time where I was the only one that showed up.
Oh,
early on. Cause I started it. I think we started August was 2DCon. And then I had a couple show up where it was like two or three people showed up to my design days. I had like an 11-person email list at the time, most of which haven't even come to design days to this date. So it was mostly like three people. And they were like, oh, yeah, this is nice. Yeah, I have a couple designs I want to work on. This is great. It's like, oh, awesome. Yeah, just bring it on and we'll play test it. And, you know, at Game Center here, which is a old Fantasy Flight Game Center. And it was just, you know, free for us to be there. Didn't have to reserve anything, like, and we just played some games. Mm-hmm. And then one time I was just there by myself. One time a friend came, the other Trevor Kirchner, and we designed a game together a little bit and was like bounced ideas a little bit, and that was fun. And then ultimately, because I was consistent, I was doing it on a consistent basis. I kept sending emails out to the email list, and the email list kept growing. People kept telling other people about the email list. I finally told Charlie that it was happening.
Yeah.
he missed the day that I was doing the signups, I think, at 2DCon too.
Probably, yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
But so I think it's been really cool to see it grow too. And like,
yeah,
we were talking about this earlier, like it does feel like the entire community is getting better and better.
Yeah.
And like not only better at game designing, but just like getting better at giving feedback as being playtesters and stuff. Yeah, and having the Discord too, it's like always active.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And then there's other events coming up around it too. Like there's a local Break My Game event. There's also a second Protospiel now, which I want to say is partially because of Design Days.
Yeah.
Because I think Eric Lodos is the one that started that one up. And he was doing Design Days pretty regularly for a long time there.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's great seeing everything else pop up. I know there's been a couple games that have been signed because of Design Days, which makes me feel really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just great like seeing this grow. And it's only been 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're barely into the infancy of it, in my opinion. And it could just keep growing and keep getting stronger. We keep getting better. And, you know, for Split Perspective Studios, it's less about, like, trying to make a game at that point, you know? It's trying to foster a community where we all are getting better at doing this, meaning we have a higher chance of releasing good games, meaning we have a higher chance of supporting each other and making even better games. And, like, really, that's my end goal, is helping everyone make as good a game as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Which, like, perfect.
Well, we all appreciate it here in Minnesota.
Well, thank you. I'm glad it worked. I had no idea if it would.
That's, I feel like, the story of a lot of things. Like, you don't know if it's going to work at all.
Like my Patreon.
You just got to try it. Yeah.
Yep. And that wasn't right. That wasn't the right fit for me.
Yeah.
But now I started a design community. And yeah, I think I last said it was 113 people on my email list, which, how are that many people that even think about game design in the Twin Cities or in Minnesota or locally, you know?
And probably a vast majority are designers.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say 80% or so are designers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is fun to have a group like that with designers, because I always feel like when I'm testing with just playtesters,
plebeians.
Yeah, it's a different feel. Like, I usually approach the designers at the beginning and the end of the process, where it's like
Protospiel.
Very early. Yeah. When the design is like not formed yet.
Yeah.
Designers can help you brainstorm a little better.
Yep, absolutely.
And then the end of the process, when it's like, you really need those people who can figure out the last
dial it in
tweaks.
Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, you just don't need that entire part of the game and it'll be great. Oh
yeah.
Shoot, you're right.
Yeah.
Darn. I've been playing with that for 6 months.
Yeah.
Which is why I did Design Days.
Yep. Well, this is fun hearing like Trevor's origin story.
Yeah. Ooh.
What other things I want to ask you too about, like, your not only the past but maybe the future, and like what are you working on that you're most excited about right now?
Charlie just play tested a game for me at Design Days, because we just came back from that.
We did.
I changed the name, so it's Heroes Born of Darkness. I've revised the entire game, and now I'm calling it Real Time Heroes, which I really like as a name. But basically, I really wanted to model it after the Daredevil TV series. The original one and the new remake is a little bit closer as well. But ultimately, like, you are using real-time mechanics as a hero to go through these encounters set up by the villain, which was the core of the original Heroes Born of Darkness, but turn-based, very math-like, +2 attack, +1 defense. Does that card beat that card? It does. You got it. Like, and now it's like, okay, I'm trying to get through these cards, trying to do this. I have timers. I got things going on. And it creates that adrenaline that I was really missing. And I know we talked about it a little bit in our Dutch Blitz episode a little while back, because I was inspired by that, because it gave me that adrenaline that I was looking for. And so it gave me the inspiration to, like, dive into that. And I'm really excited to see where that goes. And now that I'm done with tax season again, I'm really looking forward to expanding all my other games that I have working on. Arc Magus again. You'll notice I tend to revisit my games over and over, because I want to, like, find the shape that it really wants to be and get that to be what it should be. But I still have so many projects in the fire. Mm-hmm. I probably remake 8 games or so every so often.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm also an RPG designer. I didn't say that earlier. Tabletop RPG.
Yeah. That's a aspect of the show we haven't gotten into yet,
because
it is more of a time commitment to
it is a bit of a time play. Commitment.
Yeah. But yeah, what's your gaming pass? Were you doing D&D and other RPGs a bunch? Or
oh yeah, so I started D&D when I was 10. My Whoa. Cousin Nick and I got the starter set for 3.0, and we would just play at my grandparents' house on Sundays. And he would be the DM, and I would be like six player characters. And it was more like just playing through the maps with the attacks and defense and rolling the dice. We didn't get into role playing at all. There was a unicorn, I remember. It's like, oh my God, there's a unicorn. We got to save the unicorn. But like that was the entirety of what I remember from it. I know at one point we weren't sure how traps worked, and so someone fell down a trap and just instantly died because we didn't know how to resolve that. I'm like, that seems tough. Hmm. But again, like strangely enough, my cousin had owned the starter kit, and he decided it came with a character sheet for you to make your own character. And I was like, that's very exciting. And he did all this stuff with it and like gave it, you know, 900 strength, 900 dexterity. I'm like, there's gotta be rules for this.
That's how that works.
Right. But yeah. Like, that's where immediately, cause he was older than me too. You know, he was 11, I was 10. So I didn't I didn't know what was going on. But like, I immediately like, oh, there's gotta be rules around this in order to make this fair. And so that's like, I can tell that was that nugget that started me down the path originally. It's like, I wonder what could you do to make that more fair? Like, oh, there's a book. Oh, we got to get the book. Then I got into D&D and I ran games for my mom and her husband when I was a teenager as a DM. And so like, yeah, I started very young.
Yeah. Already thinking about balance at
10. Already thinking about balance at 10.
Got to make this more fun and challenging.
Yeah. And that has always been my curse. I always try to make games more challenging than they should be. And that's just something I got going on.
That's good. I mean, that's a takeaway from this. It's yeah. like so many prototypes I've played. I feel like there's not the tension of like, what's challenging me in this game? I don't know. I just do the actions.
I just do the stuff and then stuff happens. And I won, I guess.
Yeah.
That's neat.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. But yeah, so after that, I also became, you know, I designed probably two RPGs in college. One was a magic-based one that was a really weird experience system that I loved, but it was too loosey-goosey, and one of my players took advantage of that, and it was a little bit of a nightmare.
Went off the rails.
Pretty extremely. Okay. Yep, and then another one was called Zeg, the zombie apocalypse game, which one of my friends got obsessed with, which was a lot of fun, but... Yeah, it didn't go anywhere really because I just didn't know what I was doing.
Did you write out the whole storylines or how do you?
So just the rule sets. Okay. So for that, those ones I did, you know, just typing them up in Word as like a PDF or, you know, a Word document. And I was trying to come up with like, because, you know, zombie games, headshots are like the instant kill. And then I had other shots that would do different things. But it made it too kind of nitty gritty for kind of the lighter feel that the game was. And I didn't know how to change that. So I'm like, oh, I can't change it. So I just got to stop working on it. And I don't even know what happened to that game. That's somewhere deep in some hard drive that's been buried in the earth probably for a few decades. And then I also started working on Manifest, which I started when I was in Vegas. Mm. And Manifest, there was another Manifest RPG that came out in 2019. So this is completely unrelated to that. Set in my own world that, you know, when you're in a very strange place like Las Vegas for an extended period of time, trying to find some escapism. Yeah. And so I created my own world with my own system and was really excited about it. And I've been plugging away at that since 2012. Hmm. Every now and then. I'll take like a year off sometimes or more. And the pandemic, I definitely didn't work on it at all because accounting degree, pandemic, et cetera, et cetera. But
yeah.
Yeah, RPGs are cool.
That would have worked possibly remotely.
And I did do some remote games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but yeah. I kept getting back to I didn't know how to resolve a single element of it, and so I'd shelve it for a long period of time. Mm.
Yeah.
And like, because RPGs, again, very difficult to test. I know for design days, we have, I think, 3 or 4 RPG designers on that list, and it's tough to test. Like, we only have 4 hours each time we meet. And we try to test multiple games during that time for each person, which makes it, you know, you have an hour or so to play. Mm-hmm. And playing a tabletop RPG in an hour, unless it's built for that, it's not a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tough to test. And that's also why I moved more to board games, because they often are much easier to test than an RPG.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Trevor, I think any
I can keep talking
takeaways. Let's see. Yeah.
Oh, takeaways from my life?
What's your takeaway from your life?
Oh, my God. show up and try. That's it. That's
good.
Show up advice. And try. Yeah. I stopped trying for a while, and I got really sad. I stopped showing up, lost track of everything. Just show up. And even if you don't, like for us, like in design days, you don't have to bring a game. Today we had the most people not bring a game that I've had in a while, but that's fine. We have other games that people will want to play. And like sometimes you can get a second playtest then of a game and you can make adjustments to it and see if that works a little bit better. But yeah, just honestly, if you continuously show up for yourself, for your game, for your community, it will pay back. And that's the important part.
Yeah. Words to live by.
Words to live by.
Yep. Cool.
In my 36 years of living.
What were we joking about? Back in my day, I don't know. We were making some old person joke. Like, but how old are you?
I'm 36. Yep.
Okay. Yep. Super old now.
Born in 88, pre-90. Yeah.
Yeah.
Talking to some people last night. So Film Score Fest happened last night for Charlie.
Yeah.
And I met some young people.
That's okay. Not for this episode, Trevor. Oh, sorry, Trevor.
Sorry. We'll cover that in the next episode.
No, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Meeting younger people is a hoot now, because now I'm actually older and younger people can drink, and that's a very strange thing.
Yeah. Well... with that, we'll sign off. Feels weird doing an episode
without Ananda,
but don't worry, he'll be back soon.
He'll be back.
All right, till next time.
Hey, thanks for listening to The Tabletop Takeaway. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you, so please tell your friends and visit our website at thetabletoptakeaway.com, where you can suggest games and mechanics for us to cover next on the show.